because we make this, well, we especially in our first stuff, it was like really kind of calypso-y, that kind of thing. And people would meet us and just be like, so boring.
Yeah. I didn't like Jake very much. The first few songs were definitely influenced by that kind of music and Afrobeat.
I remember me and Rob would find every open mic night we could find in Manchester, and there was like loads. And so we'd just do all of them, and we would try and get our Facebook to, you know.
You start off, like if I think back to like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, where I was like, ooh, it'd be cool to play like my local festival one day. And then it's like, you go to like Mexico now. It's crazy.
Like I almost ruined our trip to Mexico. You know what I mean? I'd if somebody's like, I don't like it, I'm just like, you're probably right.
Bienvenidos a un capítulo más de Sell Out, el podcast de Negro Pasión, www.negropasión.com, la tienda de merch más fregona de Latinoamérica. Hoy tenemos otro capítulo en inglés, pondremos subtítulos. Tenemos desde el Reino Unido a Rob, Jake y Dara de Casia. Welcome to Sell Out, guys. Thank you for being here.
From Manny. They call it Manny.
Yeah, Manny. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So Casia is playing in Monterrey.
Casio's playing in
Monterrey.
And
in Corona Capital as well, right?
Yeah, first time in Mexico.
Wow,
yeah, man. I've not been on holiday in Mexico either.
Yeah. You've never been?
No, never.
First timers?
I've been once before. Ages ago, though. Okay. Like, I think I was like 14. Oh, it was okay, Cancun. No, yeah.
Cancun?
Yeah, well, so I can imagine. I'm like, it's a very different experience. You know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so, nice. Welcome, guys. Thank you for making the time to talk to us. I have a lot of questions for what is... How do you guys got started? You're a trio, right? A power trio band.
Yeah. Power trio.
Power trio.
Power trio.
That's definitely important.
Power.
Word.
Yeah. Power.
Power.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the middle name. But you guys in your bio, you're like tropical guys, but not that tropical. What's that about?
So I think someone just said it to us once, and we thought it was funny, so we just put it in the bio.
Okay.
I don't think we don't really take it. It's seriously do that kind
not
of
really. We're not very good at thinking of bios.
No, so we thought that's perfect for us.
Tropical,
we're going to take that intellectual property.
Tropical vibes, not tropical vibes.
Tropical vibes, not
tropical dudes.
Basically, because we make this, well, we especially in our first stuff, it was like really kind of calypso-y, that kind of thing. And people would meet us and just be like, so boring.
Yeah, so boring. So boring.
What happened?
Yeah.
You know. And this is your first band? Or you've been in other bands before?
I guess we went through many different phases of musical life, didn't we, before Casia emerged?
We never did anything necessarily together, did we?
Yeah, we didn't.
Before
I didn't like Jake very much.
Come on.
I hated him.
I can tell.
It happened.
I didn't know Jake.
You could feel the tension.
But everybody usually loves the drummer. The drummer is usually like Switzerland.
Yeah.
That's how I'm often described.
Yeah.
Peace.
Drummers are always chill.
Just do your job. Yeah. They usually don't get the attention they want.
Jay gets loads of attention. Yeah. I get no attention.
Are you
kidding? It's really sad.
Sometimes people come up to me after shows and was like, oh, you're in the band? And I'm just like, yeah, okay. It's like the damn.
So
yeah, it happens.
So you guys, when did you guys start it?
That's a good question. I've not answered that question in a long time. 2017, 2018?
Officially. We started jamming at like 2016.
Yeah.
When the world started to decline in general?
Yeah. I think it might, deeply connected with us being a band. the world is going. Yeah,
the state of affairs in the world.
Everything will go better.
Deeply connected.
Awesome. You're Calypso band.
Yeah.
From Manny.
Whose idea was to start a band?
I went to school. We were lucky enough to have a studio at our school and did like some of the very first embryonic Casia ideas there, and then had a gap year, and Louis the bassist, who is now Dara,
Dara. Dara is here. Dara, say hello to that camera there. Dara,
over here.
Yeah. Yeah. Thumbs up.
Legend. Yeah, basically, we started just jamming. He was working in a studio, which I had like a little room in. And we just jammed together. And then we had first couple of tunes and got some gigs. Met Jake in the pub.
In a pub, in a bar, drinking.
Yeah,
yeah, the best place to meet.
It was a good, yeah,
good friends.
It was a good, yeah, it was a good start.
Yeah,
you
know?
I can't remember that night very well though.
Yeah, you were. Do you remember? I can imagine. Like, yeah. I was at the bar, and these two, I kind of knew them a little bit. Mm. I'd seen Rob around and stuff, and Lou, and then yeah, they just came up, and they were like, "Fuck!" It's like, like, we're looking for a joint and fucking lights. And I was just like, what the hell's going on? And
I'll do it.
I was just like, okay, you know. And, but to be honest, from there to like practicing, I have no idea how we managed to do that because it was such a
lot. We got a festival. Right. We got like a legit festival, didn't we?
Yeah.
Like it was a good one. And then it was like, right, well, we have something to practice for because originally we were just jamming and whatever.
Like a deadline is always the best thing.
And then, and then it sort of set things off in the right way, and then we kind of really never looked back.
And did you, I've listened to your music, and it's kind of like consolidated in the like the funk pop. I don't want to put like labels on it, but it sounds, you know, like you know you have your sound already. How did you come up with it? Like, how do you get to that place where like we're gonna do this, you know? Because maybe you were, I don't know, like a metal fan or whatever before. How do you get like to that?
Well, it was like so. Rob's dad, when he was a kid, grew up in Zambia, right?
Zambia,
yeah.
And so there was loads of that. Like your grandma, right? Had loads of.
She had loads of records and stuff. She's like obsessed with music, and they're all kind of like suckers, high life. You know, guitar-based music. So I kind of like naturally was interested in how to play that because I was like, it sounds really unique and maybe I could use it for something or whatever. And got really into that side. And the first few songs were definitely influenced by that kind of music. And Afrobeat followed afterwards, didn't it, really? Yeah, we got heavy into that for like the first album. And then we still retain like a lot of those influences, but I think they've just changed over time. Like you get into different music, you get into like hip hop or like whatever, and then you start merging everything together. But I think it was, that's kind of how it came about, isn't it?
Really. It wasn't like that much thought about.
No.
Yeah.
And I think it's when you're like, you guys will know, and when you're a band, the coming together of a few different people make it unique. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think so. Like, I think if it was just any one of us, it would have been supremely difficult to like imagine what it ended up being.
Yeah.
But and there was also like, I was asked to do like an Afro blues gig by this guy, and he was like, I want you to play like kick drum, hi hat, and a djembe. And I was just like, what's a djembe? I was like 16 or something. And so he was like, it's one of these things. I'd like you to play that. And I was trying to like figure out, like, how the fuck am I going to play these things? And it ended up being this like,
yeah.
And then it was like, maybe I could play that with the Cassia guys. And that from my end. Kind of.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it came by like naturally. It just, it clicked and that's what you.
And what does Cassia mean?
Well, originally it was just so that we could play a gig. We just like, me and Lou had this pub gig booked, and it was on the day that we were like, we should get a name. We have a few tunes or whatever. And then, so full disclosure, it was just a Google thing initially. And then we were like, we kind of intended on changing it. And when Jake got that djembe, that was made of cassia wood.
Okay.
Which we were like, I was like, that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Now we have a meaning.
I was like,
we're meant to be famous. You know?
But those are the best names. Like the names that are, we always talk about that on our podcast. Like the best names, the ones that are like really great sounding, are just like really shitty bands.
I know.
It's like they have the best name, the best like album cover. Yeah. You're like, what the fuck is this? I want to listen to this now, and it's just like generic Spotify.
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so like because some bands, you just like the names are weird.
Mm.
Like Arctic Monkeys.
Yeah, Beatles. I think it was only until Arctic Monkeys was a funny one because I think I read somewhere that because he was obsessed, Alex Turner, with John Cooper Clarke, who's like a famous Manchester poet guy, punk poet. Okay. And I think he said to him once, like, because he was like, oh, I don't like Arctic Monkeys or the name or whatever. Yeah. And I think he said, like, oh, it's the best name because of this reason or whatever. Oh, really? And then it kind of affirmed it.
That sounds
cool. I think it's cool when stuff like that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because I don't think you can get it right.
And the first album time. Cover of them I saw was like this word, like this awful album cover, you know, like this.
Oh, what that?
This old punk guy, like
painting
a finger or whatever.
What, Suck It In? Was that Suck It In?
Is it just a random guy? In the pub. I think it's just a random guy. I can't remember, but I think I read somewhere.
I know that's the second one, isn't it?
Was that the second one?
The first one's like whatever.
What was it?
Whatever people say, that's what I'm not.
Ah, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, goes to
show. It's a funny one, isn't
it? Album art's hard though, isn't it? I think because like, I don't know, it's you've put so much time into the music and then you're like, now we've got to make art that somehow represents what that feels like.
Oh, fuck that.
It's fucking well out of
it.
Yeah, I run into that problem when we made a fresh band. We were like, okay, we have our album ready. And I was like, okay, promote it. Like, your album cover, what are you going to upload into Instagram? We're like, fuck!
Yeah, no, it is.
And that's like, it seems to be like, that's like 80% of the work. And
the
not
sexy
the music.
Part of the business is doing the music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that the fun part? You're in the studio with your buddies, you're drinking, you're collaborating. It's like making great shit happen, art. Then you get to the real world, you need to promote it, you need to go to the news, you need to go to all these outlets to be there and say the same thing over and over again in interviews. And then you're like, shit, this sucks. Okay, this is a business, you know, at the end of the day. And people need to hear about you and your music and what's behind the artist and everything, and that's not sexy at all. Going at 6 in the morning to the media, and interviews, and it's fucking exhausting.
Yeah,
I've been doing like lately music for TV series and that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
And it's awesome, but like it's the same thing. It's like music. It's like the least. Composing or whatever. It's like that's under the, you know, whatever, and everything else is just like fucking organizing and naming and, you know, like all this back and forth between the corporate people of this and that, and then you have to, you know, have this library and organize like your sound files based on, you know, moods and this, and it's like fuck all this. And
I need an assistant to do
this. Yeah, I was gonna say.
And the fucking like theme music or whatever you made in like a fucking MIDI controller in like 4 seconds. I kid you not, in like 4 seconds, and that's it. You know, that's and everything mad. Else is
admin.
Yeah,
bureaucratic shit.
Bureaucratic. Oh, yeah. My God. But crazy. But yeah, album covers seem to they have lost like importance. I think I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to.
That's a good thing as well. It makes the music more important, I think.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice when you can kind of see a bit of an extension of the music in it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think of one. Like, when you mentioned that I feel like is like really cool.
Currents.
I like Currents. I like Alt J's Awesome Wave.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Where it feels like you can look at it and listen to the music, and then it kind of makes
it
you.
Kind of clicks.
It kind of like connects it, connects the dots in a cool way.
Yeah.
I'm always really impressed when bands do that. It's like, that's kind of.
Also,
sick.
Once you guys started, you guys had your first album or your first song, and did you guys look for a manager? You guys registered your band name? Like,
or
you're just
like
any
gigs,
other new band?
Gigs and pubs and or
pretty
whatnot.
Much. Yeah. I remember me and Rob would find every open mic night we could find in Manchester, and there was like loads. And so we'd just do all of them, and we would try and get our Facebook to, you know, because at the time when we were starting out, it was like Facebook. And so we were trying to get like, please like us on Facebook and all that kind
Follow
of thing.
Follow us on Facebook.
All that stuff. And then we had three songs. We recorded three tunes, and we made these like super basic performance videos, and we put them on Facebook ads, and this was like when you actually could get views, and so we put some money on it was like it got loads of views, and that kind of kicked us off really, and
it started like, to make us we had loads of drive after that
because we had a
like,
thing
I was like, right, we need to go do do more of this thing.
If I only knew, you know, it was kind of free. It was so cheap.
Wow. And did you guys get to a point of, well, we're taking this seriously. This is what we're going to do the rest of our lives. You know, this is going
to
be our... Like,
how do you get from that to being in Mexico?
Sometimes I do think, like, it's absolutely mad. I just think it's mad. Like, when you go, you know, you start off. Like, if I think back to, like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, when I was like, ooh, it'd be cool to play, like, my local festival one day. And then it's like you go to like Mexico now. It's crazy. I think it's
playing in one of the biggest festivals of the country.
Yeah, it's mad. It is insane. With like all the bands that we grew up listening to and stuff, which is just, I think it's just outrageous and it's really cool. Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
But like you guys will know, it's like so many things happen. But you know, like, and it's
a little bit of luck, but a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Man, you know? So much effort, I feel like.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the bands that get past kind of, you know, like the bands that kind of get people who they don't know interested, and you know that when they get to that thing, they've all, they're, you meet them and they're like fucking on it, like they care about it, do you know what I mean? Like, and I've noticed that, like, we were quite like that at the beginning where we'd have a good time with it and it was fun, but we really did, you know, make sure we were putting the hours in and really tried to figure out what we could do right.
And there's just so many bands in the UK. Like everyone is doing music, so it's like
you very competitive.
You have to be really like in it, consistent. Sort of try, you know, at least give it a shot. You know, ready to sort of travel around, do as much as you can. Because I remember we used to go to, was it? We used to busk in Cornwall for the summers, camp there, and like just do as much stuff as possible to make sure that like we were kind of getting the music out in the best possible way. And also, you learn a lot, I think, through doing that as well.
Yeah,
it's like playing.
I think people get the vibe of like if the artist is taking it serious, you know, if you're taking it kind of serious and being consistent and you're kind of worried about yourself and your art, I don't know, people, I think they feel that and they take you more seriously and they kind of
maybe
they focus a little bit more on the thing. Yeah,
I think if you're like, if you've got conviction, I think that's kind of like people buy into that, don't they? If you're like, I've seen videos of really famous people like, we're going to be the biggest band. And then it's like, they actually happen. You know?
Oh my God. Yeah, I've seen that with like the Coldplay guy, right?
Yeah, that was the video.
I was like, fuck, they really did that. By like a month or something. Yeah.
But I imagine you guys had the same feeling that when, like, it is mental that we're here. And it feels just lucky. Like,
obviously,
you try as hard as you can and you do your best, but you still feel unbelievably lucky. We were in Iceland the other day and we got outside the airport and I was just like, fucking Iceland.
You were in Iceland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just for a gig?
Yeah.
What
the?
Festival, yeah.
Wow. It was just really nice.
Awesome.
It was cool.
It was cool. But like Mexico, I mean, look at this.
I actually can't stop looking at the view.
So polluted. So
is that what it is? Pollution.
It is.
Yeah, a lot of industry here in the city.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. It's not regulated, so you can see the smog. But hey, once in a while, you get a clear view and the mountains look beautiful.
Yeah.
Insane.
You guys got such a sick view.
I know. I was gonna say this is pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we love the view. But sometimes we close the shades because one time a fan of the podcast did all this investigation to find out where we were. Like, he was pointing to the gas station, the brand, like how many they have, and then
going through like my history, like my WhatsApp history, and I just started that, and it's like this storyboard.
The guy made a presentation.
Oh my
step
god!
Step by step, where to find our studio.
Honestly, this is insane.
So the guy was like, hey,
"Oh my god, this is."
And it's like, here's the OXXO, you know, like here's that. Here's the presentation. Crazy. It's like, okay, so these guys are here, and that's the window view, you know, and so based on the map. I don't know how he got a hold of like the floor plans of my business.
Yeah, and the guy just wrote an email saying, "I'm not a stalker, but just take a look at what I did." I'm like, "You're a stalker."
Curious.
Block.
That's great. You guys. God. So have you guys got some pretty like intense fans?
Oh yeah, but this guy does more.
No, it's because I used to play in this band that was like really popular with the emo crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And
fans were so intensive.
Really?
And yeah, it's like the kind of band where like other artists didn't take us seriously. But
Chemical Romance of Mexico.
Really well.
Ah, right, okay.
It was back in that day, it was measured with My Chemical Romance in Mexico. It's the best way to explain it to you guys.
Wow. Crazy. And I get it when you were saying right now that like this feels like really lucky. And the more time passes by and I look back on that, it's like, wow, that was like really fucking, really mad that I got to live that kind of like Backstreet Boy kind of thing.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's mad. Because that's like another level.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same thing because you're like in another country playing and you have fans and it's the same thing. Like, how did I get so lucky, man? Oh. Yeah. And it was like the last years that I kind of like started taking it seriously. Like this should... Like
well, you got older.
I got older and I was like, no, this is like, it's like I got a lucky break.
Yeah.
But... to get to this place, people really like work really hard for that. You know what I mean?
How did you start then?
I got invited into this band and they had like two records already.
Uh-huh.
And by the third record, we decided to make it like emo bass. And it was like all this, you know,
exploded.
It was like the scene was getting on and it was kind of like the Mexican Latin version or whatever of representation of that, you know, wave.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it just kind of like blew up and I did that for like 10 years or something. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And now I'm here with
had some Grammy nominations, MTV Unplugged and everything. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, guys,
yeah.
That's crazy. I heard about awesome. MTV Unplugged.
Yeah. Yeah. I have Cali the guitars. Those two guitars in that picture.
Really?
He gave me the guitars. Yeah. They were used in the MTV Unplugged.
That's but I was thinking like as the years go by and it's like, that band gave me so much, like metaphorically, like lots of learning, like everything that you know you see around you, you kind of like push it up against what you lived, and you think about like teamwork and you know leadership or whatever and what, and you're like, oh fuck, so that's what happened and this and that. So, what you're living right now is like, you may not know it right now, but like 10 years from now, you're like, oh, so this is like what it means. If, you know, I flew from fucking Canada and these guys flew in from Manchester and they kind of had a, you know, we had a misunderstanding because they were like, kind of like, fuck you because that, and you kind of see it a different way. You know what I mean? Because when it's so in front, up front, you kind of just deal with it. But later you're like, you see everything like the freaking Matrix and it's like, oh, so this is what this means and that means, it's really great.
That's kind of so you finally get perspective on it.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah, really, really great perspective.
It's a very like narrow like existence, I feel like.
Strange lens to live.
It's definitely different.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, music.
And also you
because everyone just starts kind of so innocently.
Yeah.
You know, you just get a guitar for your birthday or whatever.
Like one step in front of the other and that's it.
Yeah. I just think it is insane.
But then you're in freaking Mexico and, you know, doing the podcast with, I don't know, whoever.
Couple of dudes.
Yeah. And, but, okay, so I don't know if you mind asking, but like, do you guys, how do you like carry the band and how are you here without, like, do you have any other jobs? Did you like finish school and all that stuff? Like how are you dealing with all that stuff?
So went to uni for 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
If you have a job, you're gonna lose it when you go back.
you didn't go, did you?
Yeah. I feel like the reason you ended up going to uni for 5 weeks was partially my fault. I was like, what? We used to rehearse in Macclesfield, in our little town. And then Rob went to uni in Manchester, or Salford, which is 40 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
And me and Lou were like pissed that we had to drive to rehearse 40 minutes. So I'd be like fucking complaining. And like, why have you even gone? Like, we're going to be in a band and all that stuff. And then I think, I don't know why, you did drop out.
Yeah, I kind of just realised it because I was doing music. So I was just like, well, there's not really... Mm. Didn't really feel like there was much point in me doing something like that at that time when Cassie was doing, so it was bubbling, wasn't it? Something was happening. So it was like, okay, well, you may as well take a chance and then just see what happens.
Well, you guys are young. You can take a chance.
Yeah, and it was, at the time, and it was we great. Were
quite, like, you know, 20.
So you 19. Kind of put all your chips in there.
Well, me and Rob were like, we had a studio, like, well, it was a studio, but it was like about,
it was tiny.
Uh-huh. But we were trying to produce artists and, help build artists through what we were learning from the Cassius stuff. And so we were making a bit of money doing that. And also we would teach drums or whatever. So that's kind of how it was at first. I'd go to primary schools and teach.
It was like the first year of it, wasn't it?
First a few. And then we basically just lived at home and earned absolutely nothing. Yeah. You know, for like, for a while. Like,
it feels great, yeah, sometimes. Yeah,
it's like, good now. Yeah.
You look back, yeah, and think, how did I actually live?
Survive.
On that amount of money.
And then we got a manager. Then we got a manager, and then it was all the dots started to connect, and then we got signed, and then it was actually to Cali. Cali was working for this label called Stiller. And then after that, released the first album, and then we're just touring constantly for what felt like,
To do a parenthesis here.
Yeah.
You got signed. You were an independent band, you're just starting, and a label came in. Well, it's very dangerous sometimes.
It was quite a while though.
Yeah.
We'd released two EPs,
I think so. Yeah, it was two.
So it was like three years.
We had 100 times over Moana,
Paradise Beach stuff. But there's like the Weekend stuff as well.
Ah, it was the Weekend stuff. It was around that time. Yeah.
But that was like then when that happened, they paid like us.
Which is great.
You know, like they paid us some money, but we were able to give ourselves a salary.
Yeah.
So it was like, fucking hell, we can actually do this.
We're making money.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, all to my teaching job, it's like, fuck you guys. Like, you
know. I made it, mom.
Fuck you.
Look at me, mom.
So good.
But that's awesome because signing with a label, then you started questioning. You get a manager and then, well, we're going to start paying fees to this person or this company. You know, you're going to start splitting a percentage of everything you make. Yeah. And sometimes people don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes ambiguous. Like, what's the value you do? Like, you're making sometimes more than I do or the same. Because, of course, you know, the percentages sometimes go up and down. Totally. It's not steady. Then you come to a label and who owns the masters? I'm signed. If we split, I'm not gonna be able to play with no one.
Yeah. How'd you get that schooling? Like, of
the I think through industry. Doing it was the only way that we figured it out. Because we were kids when we were like when we did the whole management thing or whatever. We didn't have an idea about what to do. I remember emailing like promoters being like, "Can we have a gig, please?"
You know, just repeatedly shit on.
Yeah. Repeatedly shit on.
No, because everybody gets fucked. Music industry.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to.
It comes with
the business.
Yeah. I think so. And we try to pay attention when your lawyer's telling you what the contract means.
Yeah.
But you're reading this going like, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like whatever.
You have a contract. That's the dream. Yeah. You know?
That's the thing. Yeah. That's what everyone says. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, when you get signed, it's like the best thing. You don't want to pass up the opportunity or whatever. And you kind of got that in the back of your mind. And then all the business side goes away.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I should do this immediately.
I'll sign whatever you want.
Do you guys have to keep your masters or you negotiated that like, royalty wise? How do you guys manage?
Do you remember what we actually did with the first deal?
I can't even remember what the split was.
Yeah, I can't remember.
But you guys splitted the masters with them?
Yeah.
Okay. And to be fair, I think it was actually pretty fair, wasn't it? It was a great deal because like the studio was insane that they had. We got to use that like so much. Yeah. It was mad. And it's like the most insane studio I've ever been in.
Well, I think that's a good question to ask. Like, what do you think is fair? You know,
It's
funny. It's a weird
with the UK perspective, because it's different in Mexico.
Yeah. True. What's it like in Mexico then?
Where it gets fucked by labels here.
No, I think we're already. Yeah. No, we don't have as much of the economy is not as big as, you know, the UK or the US. So we still use traditional record contracts where you get like the master isn't yours and like my record contract is still like 7% for the band, like 7% royalty rate for the band.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's fair to say that they were the first ones that invested like almost, you know, lots of money at first for videos, this and that. Yeah. So you kind of get it. But later on you're like, dude, this is not like, it's not fair anymore.
Yeah,
and it's kind of weird, and not many are like, you have to be pretty big over here to get like a fair deal where you're like, okay, I can go for like a 30, you know, 70, 30 something for like about 10 years. It seems fine or something like that. Like you have to be big.
But you know, you hear his contract and it's still some, you get some business at like
it sounds horrible, but here in Mexico, people get a horrible contracts, but some artists are, since the economy is not that expensive, you get to make a good living out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Because if you get that type of contract in the UK with the pound, you're fucked. You know? Taxes-wise, you know? The UK is pretty expensive to live in.
Oh, yeah.
And to make music in, like getting a studio.
Dude, most expensive pack of cigarettes I've ever purchased in my life when I first like set foot in London. I was like, what the fuck?
It's crazy, isn't it?
London it's crazy.
It's
but
mad money.
It's getting worse as well.
And you guys internally as a band, how do you split? Who composes the music? Who composes the lyrics? Like, there's a lot of variables out there for a band. Sometimes it's the author.
Yeah, like, are you equal partners in everything? Or
yeah.
How does it work?
It works slightly differently now. But so the first stuff, it was split three ways.
Just because we were like, that's how we should do it.
I think all of us are on the same page, which I'm so glad about, which was like the most
the
important.
Easiest way to do
it. We wanted the most incentive out of everyone.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
sure.
And as soon as especially early on, as soon as you start splitting things away, it's immediately fragmenting people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, if everyone's getting the same thing, everyone works just as hard at whatever they're doing and stuff. And now it's like, it's very similar to that, but it's slightly incentivized. So if somebody writes a song, it's like, I can't remember how exactly it is, but like the first 50% split between whoever wrote the thing, and then the last 55% is split between everybody. So everyone always...
Yeah, it's like 50 lyrics and 50 music.
Kind of like that. And
you were structured like that, right?
Yeah, we used to do 50% split four ways for the band, and the other 50% just this singer.
Singer
because of the lyrics.
Because of the way.
Yeah.
So it's similar to that, like with whoever comes up with whatever.
Which
I think is great, just because it's like, if somebody, because it's hard work getting music that you love, right?
It takes ages.
It's super hard to make to compose music.
Yeah, it's fucking hard. And so when somebody gets something that's great, it's awesome that they... Having said that, everything goes into the band anyway, so we don't actually see it anyway.
Yeah.
But like, it's nice that they have,
you see these examples. There's an animated TV series, Logalopolis or
Metalocalypse. Metalocalypse.
Like the bass player is like, why are you making more money? The bass player complaining to the singer and guitarist. It's like, well, you can also make your songs.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make them. And the guy's just started in his living room. And he ends up explosion. Like, sucks.
Yeah.
Like, shit. And the other guy is in the shower, like, in the bathtub, just making a song and just writing and making a hit.
And the other
guy is just breaking guitar. Like, fuck, this sucks. And then it's like, it's not that easy to write a song.
I saw like a lot of, in my time, like lots of bands split up because of that, like not having an equal split. Because then the singer's like, I'm doing everything and fuck you guys, and you're gonna get like 20% minuses, and everyone just bails out because it's not the same feeling, you know?
Yeah,
the same incentive.
It depends what you're in there for as well, because like, I think we're all in it because we love writing music.
Yeah,
that's always been the main thing. So if someone brings like a great tune or the premise of that, then it's like you kind of drop everything. You're like, right, well, let's work on that.
Keep
those just,
it's so good.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, that's the best way to see it, because at the end, everybody's in the music industry to really... to really make something good out of it, you know, to be heard. It's kind of art.
It's like if you can express yourself in a real way, that's like amazing. That's
the
feeling of doing that. If you feel like you've touched on it in a certain way or whatever, that's the thing. And so when you see your mates or hear things, because we don't speak loads about like feelings or stuff like that, but
don't do
like,
it in England.
fucking
heart on the sleeve,
stereotypical.
You know?
Yeah.
But like, you read like these lyrics that your friends written, you're just like, doing good? You all right? You know? So, everything okay?
Sure.
Are you okay? You know? Just put this and I'm gonna walk away slowly.
But no, it's
moonwalking
just
out of the room, take a look at it. Fuck off.
And
also when there's a lot of people that when they're in a band, it's hard to sell out. That's why we call it sell out, the podcast, because it's the used to be a culture of if you go out do a shampoo commercial, you're just selling out, you bastard. Yeah. You know, you're not, that's not rock.
It's like a 90s thing.
Yeah. But now things have changed. Social media, everybody have to be their own boys and be out there and promote your own shit.
Now it's the other way around. Like, wow, you got a freaking commercial, dude.
Howdy, nice.
Have you guys experienced that kind of stuff?
I think it's definitely become apparent nowadays that, like, there's... You have to have like another side of your personality, don't you? That you have to work on in order to make sure that your music gets the attention that you think it deserves or whatever. It's like, because at the time of making it, you're obviously just obsessed with just trying to make the thing sound as good. But when it comes to the promoting side, I was just found nowadays that everyone is like in the same boat as well, which is kind of a nice feeling.
No, oh, yeah.
You know, it's like you speak to loads of bands and they're kind of, they think the same about the whole social media thing. That it can be quite, I don't know, it's just, it's sometimes a bit of a task,
it's
understanding
it. It's the frequency at which you have to do it. Like, because I think when you actually think about social media, it's like, it's pretty great because you can talk directly, or you used to be able to talk directly to people who are interested in what you're doing. You don't have to pay to do that. Like newspapers, you don't have to take ads out.
Yeah.
And so that's really cool, but it's just like, right, we need 7 posts every day.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm trying to like write something of worth that's true to me.
Leave me alone. You know what I mean?
Every other second, you know, it's like, what's going on?
It's awful, dude. Yeah.
You hate it.
I fucking hate that, but...
Some people are amazing at it, though. Yeah. And making it seem like really
natural.
Normal and like just part of the whole thing, which I find really impressive.
Yeah.
It's like,
but also, it nowadays, you see bands... Like, there's roles that people take. Like, one guy is in charge of the money, and the other guy is in charge of social media.
Yeah.
The other guy is in charge of the label and the manager and, like, booking.
It's crazy,
and the other guy is in charge of the musician's crew and everything. Like, there's always roles.
Yeah.
You know? Do you guys have them?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Lou, who's not here, is definitely the money man.
He is the money man.
Is he the bass player?
Money man.
Yeah.
It's always a bass player.
Yeah.
He's really good at it. Yeah. He's like, I don't know.
He's, we're just...
He manages Excel spreadsheet. And
All that stuff. Sorts all the logistics out, you know, for like getting...
Booking tickets and doing all that shit.
Stuff, yeah.
No, he's really... He's like... He's just on it with that stuff. I don't know if he like loves doing it, but... He's really good at it. And he knows that me and Rob
wouldn't do it.
Like I almost ruined our trip to Mexico.
Because you were doing something?
Well, I was. So we usually have a tour manager, and obviously we didn't do that this time. And I was like, our manager was like, make sure you bring the carne with all of the gear and stuff. And I had it. I just didn't know what to do with it.
Oh, that's true. But you lost all of your gear in customs or what?
Yeah, we got it back a few hours ago. Thank God.
Literally.
Yeah, Kelly was asking for a guitar yesterday.
Yeah.
And the guitar, and it's like,
thank you.
I'm like, what happened? And they're like, Kelly, no. It's a tequila conversation. We'll talk about it later. I'm trying to solve this shit.
I can laugh about it now, but I was so stressed out.
You were stressed
out,
I can imagine.
I just felt such a dickhead.
Well, you come to a new country, you want to make the best out of it, get the best show out there.
Definitely.
And then your shit is just stuck at costumes because you forgot something. You're like, shit, I'm such a dummy.
It was funny because I was like so glad that one of my things got lost. Because it was Rob's thing and my thing, and I was like, if it was just Rob's thing, I'd feel so bad.
Because that happened in Iceland.
We left his.
left
like,
all
my shit
there.
Is here, but yours not. It's like, fuck you, man.
And then I remember, like, I used to have, there were two guitar players in the band, and one of us, like me, I used to have, like, these expensive guitars or whatnot, and the other one was like, he always used to have, like, this shitty. Like borrowed guitar from a friend, you know, like a Fender Squire thing. Yeah. And so I know that feeling, like, I hope it's not like my shit that gets, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Do you guys get sponsored or prefer any brands of instruments?
Yeah, you have.
Yeah, I've got, so I got these Black Star amps and then Gibson as well. Yeah, I love Gibson stuff.
Well, yeah, I've had a few offers with drum stuff. But I was really wanted like a Ludwig or Gretsch thing. Okay. And so I was like, keep trying. And they just keep telling me no.
You'll get there.
Maybe one day. So it would be sick.
And maybe like a djembe company.
Can sponsor you. 100 djembes. So no, it would be cool.
Yeah.
But I don't mind so much.
I do think that like drum stuff just seems generally harder.
It seems
for
some, I don't know,
for some reason.
Maybe it's just they'll hate me. You know,
I think our drummer got sponsored for like Yamaha or something, and and he was like, once he got to know what it implied, like the sponsorship, it was like you have to do this like 3-event tour of like a drum clinic, and he was like, "Fuck that! I don't want your drums anymore."
Yeah,
that would be horrible.
I'll just buy them.
I'll buy mine.
And also,
you were sponsored by PRS at a certain point, right?
PRS guitars. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
But they don't do like full sponsorships. They used to do like 60% off, you know, retail price, which is awesome because
they're expensive.
It's like getting that 60% off a new Gibson Les Paul or whatever. Mm. It's
definitely
like,
better
than
nothing.
No, I just get loans. So I get like a few loans of them, whatever. And it's just good, like 3 months at a time. It's nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's nice because then you can kind of switch it.
Yeah. So it's like, and it looks, it looks cool.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. When
the public doesn't care, but you feel good. Like, well,
same fucking sound.
Yeah.
People don't know the difference. You have all these guitars there. You're trying to be the coolest guy in the room. And what about the other roles? Like, okay, you got the money. Who manages the booking, the manager, the label, or like who is getting everybody to rehearsal? You know, there's nobody likes to rehearse.
Yeah. You know? So our manager's quite good at getting us to do stuff. She's definitely now organizes us, I'd say. Like if we need to do rehearsals for something, she'd be like, we've got three free days here, so rehearse then. And we're just like, cool, that's great. We have a booking agent who's sick. He's here with us actually, and he books all of our shows. Just amazing.
He is amazing.
He's actually amazing. He's
really, really good.
He's such a...
Everyone's amazing, aren't they?
Man, they're all great.
Like, it's just nice.
And everyone's super passionate about it. And, you know, because I thought you probably found that when things are going well, it's because people are... they really believe in what you're doing, you know, and they care about it. And they want to try things to... And so... When you have people around you like that, it's just, it feels so good, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, we're kind of surrounded by that.
I remember the first album I put out like by myself, which is in itself like a whole different thing, like making music by yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, it feels kind of shitty that no one's, you don't have a bandmate there like hyping you up or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I tried and get a manager and they were like, no, your music's shit. It's like, dude, our other manager was like, no, you have to believe in yourself first, man. You have to believe in your music. And, you know, that's how you get people, you know, psyched for your fucking, you gotta promote your music. And, you know, that imposter syndrome you have is just shit. And you have to, so like, I'll fucking build myself up, you know? I was like, this is the best fucking album ever.
Yeah.
And I was like, so now what I need, like, last piece of the puzzle is a fucking manager and a booking manager. I was like, no, you're kind of shite, man. You kind of need better lyrics. Better. And I was like, dude, I just fucking built myself up. And it's really hard, man. Yeah. It's really hard to get people. Yeah, that's like my point, that it's really hard to get people to
be
like
you.
And be behind your band. And once you get it, it's like, don't like take it for granted.
I know. Yeah.
Because it's like, dude. Yeah.
It's so hard to like, I always think that if I wasn't in a band, I'd have really struggled because like, I'm not that kind of guy who's just like, I'm the shit. Like, and you better believe it. I'm just not like that. And I do none of us really.
Like, fake it till you make it kind of thing.
You know what I mean? I'd if somebody's like, I don't like it, I'm just like, you're probably right. Even if I love it. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like, I was just testing you. You suck. Like, come on, man. Believe in you. And what about, is there any new music coming in? You guys preparing anything new soon?
Yeah, we're always working on stuff. So we're kind of really trying to craft a bundle of tunes together at the moment. So we've got an EP coming out very shortly, but we're working on something pretty big, aren't we, to be fair?
How do you think people receive an EP?
Formerly known as.
A diferencia de, like a difference, like what's the difference between an EP and a full-blown, like... record, how does that feel?
I feel like an EP kind of, you can focus a bit more on individual tracks, whereas an album feels like it's way too many tracks to do that. It's like everything has to have like a little bit of a purpose in it. I think it has to have like consistency and like a flow. And so it's I feel like it's much, when it gets to the point where you're trying to craft the music, you passed all the ideas stage and everything like that has happened. That's when it's, I find it really hard. It's difficult. It's because you don't know, because there's so many different possible ways of to represent songs. Sonically. That it's like the choices are almost endless.
I think that because of the same thing, that it's so hard to do like a full-blown album because of like all these options and all this. I think now that I take more seriously bands that have a full-blown album, like I can't take seriously like people who just like roll out singles and you know, like two single EPs or whatever. It's like it feels like the band has more skin in the game or when they make a full-blown.
I think it shows that you're really like passionate about it.
It's like, oh, you wrote a whole book.
Novel.
Well, that's
not just 20 pages.
The thing is that the industry has changed. The fact that music is kind of disposable now. People are so saturated with music today. Everybody's just bringing new shit every day. So you need to create having an EP gives you the opportunity to release the songs periodically with a schedule and then make a video, release, throw in a video, social media promotion, then second song, then the video, then the lyric video, or the lyric video, then the video, you know? And it's all about numbers today, you know? Where are your numbers? I hate that fucking thing about numbers. It doesn't mean anything today. It's like they say, it's better to have 100,000 true fans than 3 million people don't care about
it. Yeah, it's so true. Like real fan bases that go to shows and things.
Exactly. Like follow you and are waiting for your new thing to come out, you know, like are really behind you.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing to create when you're making music. And it's all about, for me, it's not a, it's a race, but it's not about speed. It's about like distance. Yeah. How much distance can you run or know how fast can you run?
Yeah.
And it's about consistency. It's just keep trying, keep trying, keep trying, and then you're gonna eventually have a hit, and you need to capitalize it and keep going and never stop. You know.
Yeah, that is the thing.
I think that's actually part of your plans to do this, like for life, like music and
yeah.
I mean, I really love it.
Yeah,
I've done for years, so it's kind of like I can't really see that it's gonna change anytime soon.
What's about this studio you guys have over there? Like, is that yours? Is that your guys' studio?
Yeah, so we built it in like the past two and a bit years or something.
Yeah,
so you guys created your own studio to make music and to produce other artists as well.
It started slightly differently. Like, it was supposed to be just our place to practice because we came home from Berlin. We were living there for a while and we needed like a home spot.
Because we did have one there, didn't we?
We had one in Berlin and so it started out as like, should we make somewhere that's like for Cassia to rehearse, record our stuff? That's it. And then as it went on, it was like, well, it probably needs to make some money for it to work too. So we had to build more places where we could work and then rent the main place. You know, and it went like that.
Yeah, make it autosufficient in a certain way. So you can use it when you want to, but you can lease it when you're not using it.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's like a really pro studio. It's like a full-blown pro studio.
Yeah. Just for our public that don't know this, Arthur and I and Marcelo Treviño, we booked that studio without knowing it was them.
Yeah, we didn't make it, but...
You didn't even... Really?
We'll make it next year.
Next year.
We switched the date.
When? Do you know when next year?
March?
Or
May? I think...
March or May, I don't remember.
Okay. Well, if the deposit is still there.
the cash money deposit. Kindly secure our deposit.
I'm just kidding.
We're going to make some virtual instruments over there with some musicians.
That's so cool.
We're talking to you guys as an option with Cali.
Yeah.
We have this other business, me and Arthur, it's called Luchador Audio.
Okay, cool.
And we make virtual instruments, native instruments with artists behind them.
That's awesome.
And we sell them and we get a cut royalty to the artists.
Yeah,
And to have tools for people that want to make music.
Yeah.
And we have like 8-9 drummers, a couple of master classes and stuff like that. And it's part of the business that we do to make original music for
TV. And Kelly was like, oh, I know all these, you know, drummers and, you know, we can get them all together in your guys' studio. And we're like, okay, let's fly over there and see what happens.
We want to do it for the Latin or the Hispanic market that does nothing for them.
Yeah.
Everything is in the US or in the UK.
Yeah.
They wanted to have instruments that people could use in Mexico or other Latin American countries.
That's so cool.
And having some UK musicians as well could be good for the mix. So talking to Callie about it, and she was like, yeah, well, you're going to need a studio. I'm like, yeah, we know that. Do you know someone? And she pointed to you.
Sick. Yeah, honestly, okay. Yeah. We can't wait to
have we sent a deposit that we hope it's alive. But we're definitely going to do it, and it's something we want to do. And then of course if we get to do it with you guys, it will be awesome.
Just let us know.
That's so cool. You guys have your own studio, like you can rent it out, you can rehearse there.
It's mad. It's almost daunting, actually. Like, it took a while for me to like get used to it, because it was like everything that I dreamed of having as a kid, you know. So you're kind of just like, shit,
Now
it's on me now. I can't be like, well, my room sucks, that's why my song sucks. It's like, you know, so
yeah, there's no excuses now.
Yeah, that's it. So that was kind of a bit
everything sad. I was telling myself that things would maybe it doesn't work out because I don't have this, this, and this.
It's
now
not
you right. have it, that's not you
right.
better make it happen.
Exactly.
I get it. It happens sometimes.
Like,
And you were telling me before that. You got to play with all these bands you used to listen to as kids, right? Like at festivals and seeing them there. Which bands were like your favorite bands from over there growing up?
One of the biggest moments, because it was quite early on, was Robin Lou introduced me to Vampire Weekend.
Okay. Oh, I love that band. My top three bands.
Yeah.
Me too. Like, especially when we were starting our band, I was just like, it's just awesome. Like, I loved it.
And you had to play with them?
So we supported the bass player did his solo project, Bao, and he came to do a gig in Manchester, and we got an email saying, would you like to support? I couldn't believe it because I was so, I made a fool out of myself. Yeah. I remember, because I was like, well, I was like to be in the band that wrote A-Punk, you know, fucking loser. And he was like, pretty fucking dope, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was quite a special one for me.
Yeah, I actually prefer not to meet my idols because I get all like fucking starstruck and I don't know what to say. And I'm like, fuck, I hate this.
True. Some people say they don't. My girlfriend's just like, I don't really care about meeting them. I just think the music's cool. And I'm just like, so not like that.
No, I can't. You know,
me neither.
Phineas, we met Phineas, Billie Eilish's brother.
Okay.
At a festival a few years ago.
Did you have to meet her?
I didn't get to meet her because she was like hidden away, but we got to meet Phineas, and because obviously he produces everything.
Yeah.
I was just
his brother, right?
Yeah.
Brother.
I was like, it's like, I just want to say that you're the man. I think you're the man. Yeah. I was like, fuck. You know, not again.
Not again.
Not again. Hey, it happens, man.
And he's like, thanks, dude.
Yeah.
That's funny, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Vampire Weekend is one of my favorite bands. They're so like forward moving, like thinking, and it's like, you know,
they're really unique.
So unique. They have their own stamp. Like a song things. With like a harpsichord, and like what the fuck is all going on here? And
it's such a cool mixture of things.
It's like baroque. African indie rock all in
that's the thing about you English guys, like you have like all these like
influences
like it's not like so weird that you say your parents like used to live in Zimbabwe or Zambia right, and like they have like all these influences, like I'm really into this this like DJ thing. He's called it Muramasa or something.
He's sick.
I really love that guy, and he always like, I don't know, they're always like really well versed in like world music. I don't know why, but they always like bring out all these vinyls from like all over the place, and like really niche, like dark stuff, which is awesome. And I don't know, I'm really fan of like the Police, and like I was growing up, I didn't know that, you know, it was based on like reggae and all this stuff. Yeah. Which seems like a little bit like right now it's like, oh, you're appropriating this fucking genre or whatever, but they did it really well.
You
know what I mean? Like they made it their own sound, their own thing, and it's like, wow, like these fucking British guys really got how to mix the pot, you know what I mean?
Well, I always think that when you hear it immediately, like it's a freshness to something.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, fuck, I've not heard that kind of thing before. I heard Gabriel's recently.
Gabriel's.
You come across Gabriel's?
I think I've heard.
I think they're a band. There's a few of them, but there's like string arrangements, and they've recorded a vocal. It's super like 50s kind of thing. And it's just sick. Wow. And my dad showed it to me, and it's like, when you have those moments of like, there's just, they're doing something different here. I love that. Because you hear, there is a lot of stuff that's kind of in the same ballpark as each other and stuff. And
There is also this band I love with the female singer Wolf Alice.
I love
that band. I think they're from
Brighton.
Like, I think
Brighton.
Yeah, down south,
just past London.
Yeah. I love that band as well.
Did you see their was it like a award show performance of, I can't remember what the song's called. Was it the it was Mercury?
Like a formal gala thing. My God. Yeah, it was so awesome.
Because everyone was like, she's pretty cool, but it's like, she can fucking sing.
And
it was amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, besides the whole like, okay, it's kind of hyped and this and that. Like, you see them play, and it's like, what I was saying, like, you take them seriously because they really can play, and they're like really solid playing. Like, respect to them.
So just to start closing, guys.
You're gonna play tonight.
You're gonna play tonight in Barrio Antiguo. In it's called,
what's the venue called? Like 4 to 7 or something like that.
Ocho seis siete.
Okay. Yes. Cool.
Well remembered, Jake.
That's my GCSE Spanish there.
You had the face locked of not knowing where you was.
Ocho seis. What would that be in German?
German
in Berlin.
You should know that.
I should know that.
Yeah, you should know that. You're German fan.
8, 8, 6, 5. Eins, zwei, drei.
Eight in German?
What's eight in German?
You didn't pick any German up
for me.
I know one sentence.
Is it acht?
Fuck.
Neun, zehn. Zehn is 10.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier, vier, cinq, sieben, acht, neun, sein. Acht.
Acht.
Acht, neun, sein.
Neun, sein.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't remember.
This is taking a turn.
But what did this turn into? But okay, so you're playing at freaking acht, neun, sein tonight. And I got into one of your YouTube videos. Yeah. And the first comment was from a guy from Mexico. It's like, fans over here, man.
Because from the get-go, we've always had people from like Latin America and stuff saying like, please come. And we're like, that's really cool, but we have no idea how we're going to do that. So to actually be able to do it is
minimal. Yeah, it needs to be a business decision, not YouTube comment one.
No, but it's awesome that you guys are just gonna come play, you know.
Have fun.
I'm well excited.
Yeah.
We're going to a great festival to play. You're gonna get to see a lot of bands and a really great ambience around that great festival.
Yeah.
So you guys gonna have a blast.
I can't wait.
I'm sure you're gonna end up saying, we'll be back. And that's gonna be awesome.
Definitely.
Anything you wanna add that Dara?
I just echo everything you've said so far. All of it.
Just disagreeing.
Shaking my head constantly.
I hate you guys. I hate you. I just want to say that loud and clear.
Stereo.
Shout out to Big Darrow. Like, he's had 2 rehearsals and he only needed 1.
That's
a great musician.
An hour set in 1 rehearsal. He had it all down. Yeah. It's pretty impressive.
Awesome.
So, if you're looking for a session guitarist in the Manchester area,
that's great.
You'll see his LinkedIn profile.
Well, guys, this was one episode of Sellout.
Thank you so much, guys, for coming over.
Thank you for having us.
It was awesome to see you
here. Thank you, guys.
To make the connection.
Oh, honestly.
And I hope we see you guys over there in Manchester.
Yep.
And your
legend. Yep.
Your studio.
And get our deposit back. Get our deposit back. Just kidding.
No, we'll be there and we'll have fun. Hopefully we get to meet you guys over there and have a couple beers or something.
Yeah. That would be mint. Right. No food though.
No food.
English don't like the food.
English fire said, I'm going to try that.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right.